and welcome to Connectivity 190. I am one of your hosts today, Nicholas Bray, and today I'm joined once again by Perry Burkham.
Yes, hello.
Yes, we're going to be doing a second episode of Themesters, and today we're also joined by Dr. Jonathan Metz of, you know, Radio Free Nintendo, past Radio Free Nintendo host.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming, Johnny. Okay, so we're going to be talking about the music of Super Mario Land 2 today. So, Perry, how did you want to start us off this episode?
Well, I guess we can talk just a bit about what that game is. It's from the Game Boy, which is an old, long-lasting system. It was 1992. Interestingly enough, it was like in between two big games, the big Mario platformers. It was 3 years after Super Mario Land and 3 years before Yoshi's Island. And then 2 years after World. So it's like, it's weird to think that there was like 5 years in there where there was no big console platformer, but it's a really weird game.
Wait, there was World.
Yeah, two years after Super Mario World.
Oh, you mean between World and 64?
Between World and Yoshi's Island.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a long wait between those games. And, so, what we're going to do is we're going to listen to the main theme of the game. It's called Choose Your Pipe. And we're going to listen to that right now, so go ahead and have a nice listen. So that song was called Choose Your Pipe. It's basically the first song you hear when you play the game. It's like when you pick your file. And I picked it because it's basically the bare minimum. It just has the theme melody with a very simple rhythm behind it. And basically to show you how that melody is used throughout the rest of the game in many different ways. To me, when I think of a theme, this game comes to mind because of how many ways they use it throughout the game.
And that's a Mario thing as well. In other Mario games, they generally have like a running thread of a melody that they reuse over and over again as well. So,
yeah, the new Super Mario Brothers games are really big on that.
Mm.
Totally, yeah.
Which has become a problem for that sort of sub-series because sometimes people find that they don't really like the main theme, and then you end up hearing it in pretty much every stage, some version. So that can sort of poison the whole soundtrack for you if you're not into it.
Yeah, I don't understand how they can do that, how they can have the same music for every game. I'm kind of a fan of New Super Mario Bros. Though. I think I mean the theme and the melodies and stuff, it's kind of fun. I like Dancing Koopas.
I think it's okay. I think some of the like weird synthy voices and stuff are cheap sounding, I guess I would say. Right. They don't seem to put the kind of production into that those soundtracks as they do for the 3D games. Hmm. But you know, I mean, back to Super Mario Land 2, like this is a really nice kind of very simple melody. You can imagine this going in a lot of different places. I really like the drums here. It sounds like jazz drumming with a brush.
Mm. I was about to say that. That's probably one of my favorite bits of the song, that little simple rhythm going.
it's almost kind of suspenseful, you know, like it makes you want to know what's going to happen next. It just kind of, it builds up just a little bit of tension, even though it's not, you know, it's not hard hitting or anything, which, but you just feel like something's about to happen when you hear that brush drum. Which makes
sense, considering you're about to pick your file to start the game. You'd want that sort of that little bit of tension to say, oh, get into the game, sort of thing, like click A to go.
Choose your pipe now.
Well, we just happened, I guess we can let the listeners know now, we actually all flew to Sarasaland this last week, and we went and saw a jazz show at a club. I forgot the name of the club, but that's not important.
I think it was the Super Bowl Lounge.
Right, Super Bowl
Lounge. And we were all pretty drunk.
Yes, very, very, what's that word? Yeah. I heard it the other day. I thought it was so funny.
We were smoking those jazz cigarettes.
Soaked. Soaked. And so I took my, you're not supposed to record the music because they're a pretty big band, but I took my iPhone in there and I recorded, you know, on the little memo or whatever application. And I took a few bootlegs from it that we're going to listen to. And they actually played Choose Your Pipe, which is insane. We're going to listen to it right now, and you can hear the fun melody played in a live performance.
That was me on the woo at the end.
Yeah.
I can't help myself.
I tend to hear that same woo, like almost exact same, at the end of each one of these songs.
Yeah, I'm very consistent.
Yeah. That was their song. It's a little pretentious. You know, they're kind of cocky. But
I studied woo at Juilliard.
And it shows. It shows.
Yeah. I'm like a human metronome of woo.
Have you seen Mighty Ducks 2? D2?
Probably.
Well, there's a guy in there named Kenny Woo.
Ah.
And he goes, woo, 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 Kenny Woo. That's you.
All right.
Yep. I hope so.
Johnny Woo.
Johnny Woo. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that song, I think on the stage they had that time a drummer, a bass, and two guitars, two electrics.
Yeah, like there's that kind of old school electric jazz guitar, which I really liked, and then the acoustic came in and they sort of had a little bit of interplay.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, they had those like miniature guitars for the Shy Guys, so that's pretty impressive.
As you can, that's a pretty still bare minimum use of the theme of Super Mario Land 2.
I did like how that track was a bit more embellished over the simple original track. So like it had a more relaxed feel. Like the tension we were talking about before was sort of not as apparent in the cover there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Nick, I was wondering if you could tell me kind of your history with the game.
I didn't really... I think I played it a couple times at friends' houses, but, like, not very much back when it was probably old by the time. It was probably 6 years old by the time I actually touched it. Mm-hmm. I did buy it on the 3DS eShop and played a bit of it, but I kind of fell off playing it. I think I got a bit bored with it after a while. I probably should just like stuck with it and finished it because it's a short game. But it didn't really capture me too heavily. I mean, people really like this game, but you know they grow up with it, so I don't have as much of an affection for it.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of reminds me of how they kind of wanted a Zelda Link to the Past on the Game Boy. And they made, what's the Game Boy one?
Link's Awakening.
Yeah, that's like my favorite Zelda game. So anyway, I'm sorry, I just completely forgot.
You're still soaked.
Yeah. So it's kind of like they wanted Super Mario World on like the Game Boy. You know, they have like the bigger sprites and it's not.
Yeah, the game looks a lot better than the first one.
I mean, subjectively. Hugely.
Well, it looks a lot more modern because, I mean, the first Mario Land doesn't really look like any other Mario game. It felt like they didn't really know what the Game Boy hardware could do when they were making that game because it was a launch title.
Mm.
And so they tried to make it sort of look like the original Super Mario Brothers, but everything was kind of squished and tiny. And so they were able to kind of have the same scale of levels, like basically the amount of level that you see on the screen in Super Mario Land is sort of equivalent to what you could see in Super Mario Brothers. But because the screen is so tiny, that means everything's been shrunk down to be really, really small. And in Super Mario Land 2, I think they were like, screw that. Well, we want to make these characters big. We want them to look nice. We want the animations to be good. We want there to be, you know, kind of more bigger, varied artwork in this. And we don't care that means that your field of vision is going to be greatly diminished. So the jumping is a lot more kind of hope and a prayer every time you jump off a platform because you can't really see very far in front of you or up or below you either. So, I think for some kind of Mario purists, Mario Land 2 feels like less of a really like hardcore platforming action game. And maybe more of just an adventure game. Like, it's more about exploring, and it's less about making tricky jumps or, you know, defeating enemies or anything like that. It's a lot easier, it's more of kind of like this free-form, non-linear, you know, go around and check out these really big levels and just kind of play around with them.
I mean, it's really cool how they've got the world map in there, too, from, they took that from World and stuff, so...
Yeah, it's so weird, this game, you know, there's no princess. It's, instead of a princess and Bowser, you have Wario. And it's just, it makes the world so weird because Mario has a castle.
Yeah.
Like what? And then, like, you know, there's no girls there, apparently. And Wario apparently is jealous of him and took his castle. And there's 6 golden coins that are the keys that you have to go get. So you can get your castle back, which I think I can relate. I think everyone can relate to that. but yeah, that how the world map kind of brings it all together, and also has that feeling of like Super Mario World, in that sense. But the next song we're gonna listen to is from the game. It's called Athletic, and I picked it because I think it'd be a good way to show how the melody is used in a different way. But this is one of the this is probably the most popular song from the game, like in like the standard level game. So let's go ahead and listen to it right now, and then we can talk about it after. We'll be right back. All right, that song was called Athletic. It's a very fun song. I like it. It's kind of like a Japanese interpretation of kind of, it has like a bluegrass jive to it because it has like the banjo, like, but it doesn't have that straight beat. It has dum dum ba dum dum dum, which isn't bluegrass at all, but
yeah, it's got kind of like a, you know, it has this bass line that is not very deep. So it, like, at first I wasn't even sure if that was the bass line, because it's just, it's not very low pitch like you might expect for bass. But I think it, at least, you know, given the Game Boy sound hardware and such as it is, I think it serves as the bass line. But to me, it sounded kind of like this syncopated rhythm of, and I was just at a concert last night, actually, where I heard some similar kind of tricks used. But it sounds kind of like a slap bass almost with like a clavinet playing really fast in between the bass notes. Yep. So you get this very busy kind of, you know, like almost like jittery kind of rhythm and underneath the melody. And it's Athletic is a good name for it, because it's very busy. It's very full of action.
Yeah. I mean, and it's really cool, 'cause throughout the A and B section, it actually, it goes from one key to another, and you don't even realize it until it starts back over, and it just, like, the end of the chorus is and then it goes right back into this, to the original key, and it's like, it's just really cool. I mean, I love key changes, because either if you
stealth modulation,
yeah, it stealth modulates and then it abruptly modulates, you know, it sneaks in and then it slaps everyone in the face. So but yeah,
I really like the second part of that song. I think it changed the melody, just sort of goes into that extended bit. I thought that was really cool. After the, you know, the do 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 do, the next part after that was
cool. it's it's so cool, and it's really jazzy, but the thing that stinks is that the band didn't play that last night. And I didn't. Well, no, wait.
You even gave him a penny. You even flicked the penny onto the stage, and they didn't want.
No, they played it. I my darn iPhone. I forgot to hit the record button, so they played my request, but I don't even have it for us. But I do have a song they did record. It's called Pumpkin Zone, and we're gonna listen to the original first, and then I'm gonna smoothly transition into the one that I recorded last night, and then afterwards we will discuss. That last song was called Pumpkin Zone. So as I was listening to the original, you know, it kind of has that spooky Halloween theme, which now that I think go ahead.
What makes it spooky to you, Perry, musically?
It kind of has those octaves. Well, first of all, it's really bare.
I mean, there's no drums. Yeah. There's no rhythm to it. And it doesn't even follow like a consistent rhythmic pattern. Like the song just kind of drops out for a couple seconds. And you're like, wait, is it over? Oh, no. And it kind of comes back in at a weird moment, and it keeps you very off balance.
Exactly, which is exactly what this is what makes it so memorable to me, is because it doesn't happen that much in video games, where it's not a constant melody getting thrown at you, and then getting repeated. This has that nice breaks, which me and Nick talked about on the last Themesters about how breaks in music are really nice.
Yeah, Metroid music is kind of famous for that.
Yes.
Also.
Yep.
That track on the last one, Perry, that was also a spooky track, which was the graveyard theme, I think, for Mother. That's where we spoke about that space between notes and everything last time.
Yeah. But from the cover that we saw last night, they kind of took it they kind of showed the other sense that they have in jazz with kind of like the laid back, James Bond ish, but not as British,
they had the sort of, what's it called? Is it a tremolo guitar effect?
Yeah.
There's a certain kind of sustain
of reverb
on it.
And
yeah. Yeah.
There's something about the cover that, just makes you think that it's like some guy should talk over the top of it and, like, chime in every now and again with like a deep voice or something. It has that sort of feel to it.
Well, I know.
It reminds me of
like
something.
Isaac Hayes.
It reminds me of something. I can't put my finger on it at the moment, though.
I was just thinking, listening to it again, to the recording, that the jazz version of it is like, it's so kind of inviting and sexy. And it kind of takes away all of the creepiness of the original, even though you can hear the melody in there.
Right. The guitar even like brings back the melody at the end.
Yeah, I like the part at the end where the guitar and the bass start synchronizing. I thought that was really nice.
Yeah. Cool. Well, Johnny, why don't you talk about your history with this game?
Okay. Well, I think I played it earlier than Nick did, so I would have played this pretty close to when it first came out, but I'd never had an original Game Boy. I didn't have a Game Boy until the Color, which was 1998, which is actually, a long time after the black and white Game Boy first came out. Mm-hmm. So, and part of the reason that I never felt like I needed to have a Game Boy is that I always knew people who had one. So I got to play a fair bit of Game Boy at various friends' houses, or we would go on a field trip on the school bus and people would bring their Game Boys and they would let me borrow it because they knew I was totally crazy about video games. And so they would often, let me borrow it and play through stuff. And Super Mario Land 2 is a game that you can play very large chunks of in one sitting. Time you play it, you might very well beat it or play through most of it because it's short and it's easy. And it's fun, and you want to keep, there's a lot of variety in it. So as you play it, like, you kind of want to keep seeing what the next thing is. So I definitely would have played through most of, if not all of the game, pretty close to when it first came out. But, partly because I played through it so quickly, and we were probably doing other things. Like, I might have been at my friend Gabe's house playing it while we were also watching TV or playing Magic the Gathering or something like that. So, I probably would have been distracted. But, it didn't necessarily make a huge impression on me, except that I thought it was obviously a lot different than the first Super Mario Land, and a lot more ambitious in some ways, like more, kind of more modern. It felt more like a Super Nintendo game in black and white. So I was very impressed by it. And then I guess I didn't think too much on it for a long time until it came out on the 3DS Virtual Console. I don't know if you guys remember this, but a long time ago, Nintendo released handheld games on the 3DS. and you could you could download these classics. Yeah, and they were only like, you know, $2 or $3 or $4 in most cases. Wow. And it was cool because I got to catch up with a lot of original black and white Game Boy games that I had never played. Because I never owned my own, I could only play the games that my friends had, and they had a good selection, but there were certain ones that they never had.
You mean
that
like Radar Mission?
I was thinking more like Mole Mania.
Oh, okay.
But so anyway, since I had good memories, although kind of vague memories of Super Mario Land 2, I downloaded it and I played through it again. I talked about it on Radio Free Nintendo a few years ago, and you know, I really enjoyed it. But also, it reminded me just how short and easy it is.
Right. Yeah. So let's get on going. Listening to more music. This next song is one that we heard last night. It's called Seashore, and it kind of has like an island vibe to it, which, you know, seashore, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's go ahead and give that a listen to, and we'll talk about it right after. Alright, guys, now that you are mostly sober, what do you think of that song?
I like it. Yeah. Yeah, I like it too. It has like a really complicated melody. Like, there's a lot of, you know, kind of like, there's a lot of sort of dueling guitars in the jazz version. And the original, it has, I think, part of what makes it sound so aquatic is that you have this sort of like a marimba almost kind of sounding, you know, like island keyboard sort of sound to it. But then the rhythm sounds kind of like a steel drum. It has that kind of shallow shimmering kind of quality to it. So it's like, It evokes the sense of like something hitting the surface of water and causing ripples to come out. So you don't hear the drum all at once, but it kind of takes a second for it to decay. Yeah, I liked it.
So now we're going to talk about the composer of this game, the guy who wrote all the music for Super Mario Land 2.
Yep.
You may have heard of him. His name is Kazumi Tataka. Johnny, do you know anything about Tataka?
I've heard of Tataka's song, but I couldn't even tell you what it sounds like.
Yeah.
It mostly occurs in Game Boy games that I never owned, so that's part of my excuse.
Yeah, it's
in... Also, it's in like Animal Crossing games that I never even played.
Sure. It's Tataka's song is in this game, in Super Mario Land 2. Apparently, you can... Like, it's like you wait at a menu for some minutes and it comes up. Which is, I think, I love stuff like that that's, mm-hmm. you know, secret stuff that he puts in. But, yeah, he's composed for Yoshi's Story, for the Virtual Boy Wario Land, which...
That's a great game.
I've never... I want to play that game so bad, but...
Yeah, it's very underplayed since you can only get it on Virtual Boy. Not many people have ever played it, but it's really good.
Right. And then he's also done Wii Sports. He did all the music for Wii Sports.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, which cool. is, that's a, I mean, I remember listening to that on a Rio Trivia. I think they had it on there, and I didn't recognize, I mean, there's so many amazing songs hidden in that you don't even think about while you're playing, because, you know, you have all your friends and family playing, but yeah, he's also worked with other people on Animal Crossing, like you said, Luigi's Mansion. And also did stuff on Woolly World, on the new game that came out. So,
oh, cool. Well, that game has an excellent soundtrack.
Yeah, and he is the voice of Yoshi.
Yoshi!
That's it, exactly. So, it's pretty cool. So, about Super Mario Land 2, let's talk about that a little more. Just the weirdness of the game. I know that RFN has talked about that too. Just how bizarre. I think Lindemann was saying how he was creeped out while he was playing like one of the worlds. And
it's the bunny ears. They mess with him.
Yeah.
Too many weird associations.
Yeah, I mean,
it's both the Mario Land games. They're both very weird and like, don't really look a whole lot like the other Mario games, really.
Right?
Even though Mario Land 2 skews closer to what World looks like, it's still very off. So that R&D, one of the R&D teams, right? The Yokoi, Gunpei Yokoi's team were the ones responsible for those games, so they went their own direction, I guess, in a way.
Yeah, well, Miyamoto wasn't involved with these games, so. They have sort of a different sensibility. They're using Mario characters, but it feels like they've been sort of whisked away to a strange, different world where the rules are different, you know?
Yeah.
And, I mean, one thing I really like about Super Mario Land 2 is that it has all these different locales that you don't normally see in Mario. You know, you have the space zone, and you have the, you have the Mario zone where you're, like, exploring inside and around a giant Mario mech, and that's just not something you could really see happening in Super Mario 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 or whatever. You know, it just that seems a little bit too strange or too self-aware for a Miyamoto game, but I like that they went there for this one.
And which, you know, is so cool.
I have to say that I sort of miss like different teams sort of imbuing their own personality on Nintendo's franchises, because nowadays they're sort of all made by the same sort of team, same sort of people, and they adhere more strictly to an art style or
right.
sort of visual language.
Well, and
it would be cool to see someone like mix it up a bit again.
Well, kind of what they did is they kind of, instead of using Mario, they kind of just broke off into their own games, you know? Like, Wario has his own line of games now, which, you know, when I think of, like, the coolest, like, sprite-based, like, artwork and, like design, I think of Wario Land 4, which is, you know, which is actually a sequel technically to this game if you think about it. So
yeah,
but and then, you know, you got Yoshi who has his own line, and so, you know, you think of all the Mario platformers that have all those, you know, the first five games are all completely different, and now they're all the same. But I mean, now, like, you think of the difference between Super Mario World and Super Mario in Yoshi's Island. I mean, the difference, you know, is incredible. But that, like, again, that broke off and became its own, you know, franchise. So
I think you could probably make an argument that having someone like Gunpei Yokoi in charge of some of the Mario spin-off games, you know, the original EAD Studios system was set up so that the teams would compete against each other and they would innovate through that competition. And so I think you could probably argue that the first several Super Mario Brothers games on both on console and on Game Boy, they had to be innovative and they had to try new ideas because, you know, you had these multiple teams and there was probably some sense that, you know, if the other guys made a better Mario game than you did, then maybe they would sort of take over the series. You know, and so, and plus you had a lot of Mario games being made in a short amount of time. And so there was also a sense that we really need to differentiate them. And people, you know, we don't know necessarily what works and what doesn't work. And so there's more of a willingness to try things. And I think that, you know, and maybe it had to do with when Yokoi left the company after the Virtual Boy. It seems like that was, you know, around 1995, 96 was around the time that, for one thing, 2D Mario games stopped getting made at that point with the N64. But also, you know, Nintendo seemed to start becoming much more self-reflective and they started to look back to their previous games for inspiration rather than you know, completely trying brand new things that we'd never seen before, especially in these 2D games.
Well, let's just listen to another song from the game. It is called, I think it's called Graveyard. Or am I getting that mixed up with the last one? No, it's called Graveyard. Yeah, we'll have two graveyards on two episodes. So let's go ahead and give it a listen and then talk about it after. So that song is so cool. I think it really shows the brilliance of Tataka. I mean, just, you know, we're talking about gaps in songs and how you just, it's kind of like more sound effects and, but it you know, it takes that theme. Dun, dun, dun,
yep.
Dun, 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 dun. It chops up, you know, and then has all these kind of creepy things in between. And comes back.
Well, it has
in.
All that reverb on the main melody, even, so it sounds like it's coming from across a large room.
Yeah,
you know,
it's so
and the
cool.
the whole song has this sense of like things. It's almost like surround sound without surround sound, because there's all the little effects and everything. It sounds like things are like skittering around you, or there's a door that's squeaking because something's going through it. you know, and there's just a vibe of the song of like either you're sneaking around trying to hide from something, or things are sneaking around you trying to hide from you or trying to surprise you.
I have to say the instrument for the main melody, it still sounds a little too happy, maybe, to me. Maybe, you know, it's probably a little too comical. That's probably what they're like going for generally, but might have been better to maybe make the instrument on that main melody just slightly down an octave or something. I don't know, just knock it down a little bit to make it a little less cheerful or something.
Well, I mean, they didn't want the girls to cry, you know, when they played the game. They didn't want to scare him anymore.
It's not survival horror. It's a Mario game, so like all the ghosts have smiley faces and things like that. You know, it's not really scary. It's meant to kind of, you know, suggest a spooky vibe rather than actually be scary.
Right. This song is why I remember this game so well. Because I grew up, I wasn't really into video games. I have three older brothers, and they, you know, had like, they weren't really into them, but they had a Game Boy. And I remember I had this game. And so I have crazy nostalgia for this game. And it's totally from the music for the most part, because when I downloaded it from the eShop, I hadn't played it for, I don't know, like 15 years. And so I played it, and I just like instantly like shocked by how much like I remember that game and everything. So that's why I wanted to listen to this song, because I just think it's a really cool song, and it's very different from most soundtracks, you know.
It is, yeah. It's there are parts of it that definitely remind me of the later Wario Land games, which, you know, obviously spun off from this, since this game introduced the character of Wario.
Heck yeah.
But Wario has, especially like in Wario Land 2 and 3, there are a lot of sort of graveyard or zombie themed levels, because that's one of the transformations that Wario can take that is used a lot to sort of gate your progress, or to, you know, give you access to certain areas that otherwise there's no way you could ever get to it. So those games have quite a fair bit of content that's sort of associated with this sort of theme.
So I want to read something from the booklet that was inside of the game. It's really funny because it just fits with how bizarre the game is. But apparently this is in Mario's like journal or whatever. But he says, while I was away crusading against the mystery alien Tatanga in Sarasa Land, which is where we were, but she was long gone. Or he. Is it a he or a she? Is Tatanga? It sounds like a girl.
You're just thinking of that because of Boy Meets World.
Right, Topanga. Okay, and so he says, while I was in Sarasa Land, an evil creep, that's what it says, took over my castle and put the people of Mario Land under his control with a magic spell. So Mario had, you know, he was like the king of a land, apparently. And the intruder goes by the name of Wario. He has been jealous of my popularity ever since we were boys and has tried to steal my castle many times. It seems he has succeeded this time. Wario has scattered 6 golden coins from my castle all over Mario Land. These coins are guarded by those under Wario's spell. Without these coins, we can't get back into the castle to deal with Wario, so we must get them, attack Wario in the castle, and save everybody. It's time to set out on our mission. That is from the game. That's canon.
So that means that Mario and Wario grew up together.
Is this like the furthest along in the timeline? Is this after all the Mario games and he's sort of retired to Mario Land in his castle? And
I like
maybe
that.
Maybe this is the future timeline of Mario canon.
You know, I was just thinking, I guess they were both babies in Yoshi's Island DS.
Right. I love talking about
this. It holds
up.
It's rock solid continuity.
Yeah, me and my friend had a theory that maybe Wario is the actual Mario. And Mario is a version of himself that only when he is on drugs that he tries to escape from the real world, you know? Wario's at home eating garlic on the couch, and he's a slob. You know, because, like, you see those games, and they're just so gritty and, like, gross, and that's kind of how real life is.
Yeah, and, like, what if Mario hadn't gone to trade school to learn to become a plumber?
Yeah, exactly. Well, this
would have turned into Wario. Exactly. He's always looking to make a quick buck rather than earn it the hard way.
Yeah. So we'll never know unless they make Super Mario Land 3, which they already have, called Wario Land, because they wanted to do that. But yeah. So now I'm gonna get to the exciting part where it was definitely the highlight of last night, where we were patiently waiting with our instruments in front of them, you know, like we were front seat, and we asked if we could come join them on one of their songs. Now, we let Johnny pick the song, and of course, what's Johnny going to pick but the Space Zone song, you know, right?
Yeah, so, I gotta represent.
Yeah, exactly. So we learned that before. And they actually called us on the stage, and we got to play with them. So this next song is a recording of Johnny playing harmonica, and we got Nick playing guitar. And I didn't really do anything, but I recorded it. So we're going to listen to that right now, and then we'll
wrap. You were the hype man.
I was the hype man. Yeah.
The woo man.
Which, yeah, I took over Johnny's position, which I think everyone can agree that I was pretty good at hyping. I mean, you know. People were excited about this, so we're going to listen to it right now, and we'll wrap things up after we're done. Okay, so that was us playing Space Zone from Super Mario Land 2. So yeah, after the show last night, we all drank some coffee, sobered up, and walked back home. And
we had to run from the, you know, the screaming fangirls, like Hard Day's Night style. So
well
it was Themester's Mania.
Themester's Mania. Yeah. Well,
I kept telling them to be smart and bring a wig and makeup so that we could avoid this, but Nick didn't, and he kind of likes the attention, so
mm-hmm.
You know, we gave it to him. You know, we actually were chasing you too, Nick. You know, in fact, it was just us. Okay, so I need to, this is, okay. Yeah, I probably should have talked about this earlier, but the reason I wanted Johnny to come on is because, like, if you listen to past RFN episodes, a lot of times he talks about how the melody, the Super Mario Bros. Kind of introduced jazz to a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I think it's the Mr. Rogers neighborhood of video games, except it's probably much more widely heard than any of the music in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. So, yeah, I think Koji Kondo deserves, like, all of the jazz awards for education and outreach. I think the music that he wrote for, especially for the original Super Mario Brothers, although, you know, to some extent in most of the following games as well, but in that first game, the almost all the music is this amazing, you know, synthesized chiptune jazz. And most of us played it before we would have possibly recognized that. I didn't know what the hell jazz was until much, much later. And then when I heard it, I thought, wait a minute, there are parts of this that are very familiar. And I went back and I played Super Mario Brothers again, and I listened to that music and I understood. And also when I started hearing jazz arrangements, kind of like the ones we heard today for Super Mario Land 2, I realized that it just kind of made perfect sense because those songs really already were jazz. And, you know, if you play it with more traditional instruments instead of the synthesizers on the NES sound chip, then it just sort of exposes it and makes it a lot more obvious, but it's always there underneath. So, yeah, that's all.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's something that I never thought of before I heard you talk about, which, I mean, that's the thing is we're talking about on the Seashore song, it kind of has a really complicated melody, which the original Super Mario Bros. Theme is a pretty complicated melody. I mean, mm-hmm. It has like, it's like syncopated and triplets and, but it's so well written that you can still whistle it. So, yeah, I think, you know, Mario music is so good and it separates it from a lot of different franchises. So, and even though Tataka did the music for the Super Mario Land games, you know, and I think Koji Kondo did probably the rest of them, right? I mean, I don't know.
I'm pretty sure he was solo up until Mario 64. I think Sunshine, he might have finally had extra hand helping him or something. I seem to remember that's how it went.
With the Sunshine with the a cappella.
That stuff is great.
Heck yeah.
That's,
you know,
that's,
once the games started becoming more complicated, they couldn't really get away with only, like, you know, a short amount of tracks, and he can only make so much music himself, so.
Right.
Well, thanks guys. Once again, thank you for playing on the song. That was really cool that you could do that. Johnny and Nick, I know that you guys hadn't played for a long time.
I really had to dust off the cobwebs for my harmonicas.
Yeah, I got a harmonica like a year ago, a couple years ago. And it's such a cool instrument because it's like a real instrument. Like, it's not just like a, like a kazoo, right? Like, it's a real instrument that has, it's like a mouth organ, right? And so I thought mm-hmm. that was so cool because you can just put it in your pocket. Like, it's like a real instrument. It's so small.
Yeah, it's super portable, mm-hmm. but you can actually play chromatically even on a diatonic harmonica. So you can play,
yeah,
you know, very complicated melodies. And also the nature of how you play it means that you can sort of embellish any note and bend in and out of it and do vibrato and stuff like that. So, it's to do that stuff is probably more difficult than on a lot of other instruments. So it's very challenging to learn it and to master it, but it's fairly easy to pick it up and play simple things on it. So it's a great actually in Japan, harmonicas are much more popular than they are in the West.
Right.
They're not necessarily a huge part of popular music in Japan. You'll hear them occasionally, but they're so. Whereas in America, I don't know about Australia, Nick, but in America, it's very common for people to for kids in elementary school to learn basic music theory on a recorder, just a little plastic. Same, it's kind of like a flute, but it's simpler than that. But in Japan, they typically use harmonicas.
I did not know that.
Most Japanese people have played harmonica in their life and may even still own one. And so it has kind of a cultural familiarity that where in America, I think it's more seen as like a kind of a niche folk instrument. Certain genres you would expect it, and most you would not. But in Japan, it's sort of it's more of a cherished part of people's childhood, if nothing else.
I've actually had a harmonica since I was a little kid that I still have, but I never really learned how to play it properly or anything.
It's worth learning. You can, like I said, you can kind of get up and running on basic stuff pretty quickly, and then you could spend the rest of your life learning to play more complicated things on it.
What I do when I got it, it was like around Christmas time, and this might sound really funny, but I would play it while I drive, because you can play it while you're driving.
Yes, you can. You can play it one hand. You can actually play it no-handed if you have a if you have like a neck rack,
right?
Or if you learn to hold it inside of your mouth while you play it with your tongue, which I find very uncomfortable. So sure. I don't like to do it that way, but right. Some people do.
Yeah, the only thing I had problems with is that it's a cheap harmonica, and my mustache would get caught in there, and I would pull it, and I don't know if you've ever experienced mustache hair is like as thick as a pencil, and it's like rooted like deep into your like soul, and so when it pulls it hurts so much, and so I kind of started to hate my harmonica because it was physically hurting me. But you know, now I just shave, so I can you know, I'll try it again.
It's worth investing
in little shave a little gap for to fit your harmonica.
yeah
Well, it's probably worth investing in a slightly better one if you're having that problem.
Right.
Yeah, if anyone has any suggestions they'd like us to try and tackle on a future episode of this segment, let us know either by emailing connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com or even just dropping it in the talkback to this episode, and we'll see where we go on the next one, which will probably be another couple of months or so away.
Right.
We get to it.
And before we go, Johnny, why don't you plug something? Anything.
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, I'm working on a book about Nintendo World Report, but it's going to be a long time before that comes out. So I will plug the movie podcast that I do. I should plug my music podcast since we're doing Themesters. It's very irregular. It comes out every month or two, depending on how busy I am. And I'm very busy right now, so it has been a little while. But it's called Discover Music Project, and it's on iTunes. And you can also find it on crosstalk.com. That's with a W, crosstawk.com. And it's a show about introducing people to music. So, you know, I think a lot of people have trouble discovering new music. They don't know where to start. They aren't sure what they like or don't like. And I think most people learn about new music from recommendations from people they trust. And so my goal was to sort of make the show about one friend recommending music to another friend. And sometimes I'm the one recommending. Sometimes I'm on the other end of it. It's a show where I discover along with the audience most of the time, and you don't really have to know anything about any of the musical artists featured to get into it. We sort of assume that you know little or nothing about any of the music that we play, and we sort of guide you into it, and we play full songs, and each show is about 90 minutes long to 2 hours, and so you have enough time to explore and listen to different sides of someone's career and sort of see the full breadth of what they're capable of. So it's a really good guide, I think, through musical history and We cover just about every kind of music you can think of, or I would like to eventually. You know, I hope people can go through it and just look at, there's about 60 something, maybe 70 episodes. I think we're almost at 70 now. Cause wow. Jimi Hendrix was 69. Ha ha ha. You know, thumb through there and maybe listen to some of some artists that you like or that you want to know more about, and then subscribe and just start listening to all of them, because the goal is that you don't really have to know anything about it in order to hopefully enjoy the show and learn something and maybe discover your favorite new music.
Ah, and there is the title, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Discover Music Project.
So you say people introduce music to you. Has there ever been an episode where, like, people were trying to convince you to like someone and you didn't like it at all, and you were like, yeah, this is good?
I mean, I didn't lie. I don't think I was that disingenuous, but I would say that we did an early episode about death metal, and I learned a lot about death metal.
You're good.
So, I'm glad we did that episode, but it did not turn me into a fan of death metal, I wouldn't say.
Yep. I'm right there with you. Yep. All right. Well, that'll wrap us up for today. Be sure to comment on the talkback thread about a game we should do for the next Themesters, or send us an email, and we will see you on an upcoming episode of Connectivity.